This is Fate Revisited.
Welcome to the podcast.
On Fate Revisited, we'll talk about our own church as we're constantly trying to adapt to an ever-changing world as a downtown historic church. We'll talk about United Methodist Matters as our denomination faces an exciting and uncertain future. We'll explore church leadership in the 21st century.
And we'll talk to different faith leaders about their perspectives of religion today, how we can be more authentic, stop alienating people, and how faith is more important than ever to connect us to God and each other.
Hey, maybe we'll touch on a topic that speaks to exactly where you are in your faith.
We won't know until we try, right?
Let's do it. Hey, everybody, this is Ben here for the Faith Revisited podcast. I'm so excited today to have Adam Ehrlichman on. Adam has a new book out, Group Leader Training, a Biblical Manual for Small Group Leaders. I need you to have a biblical manual to help me get my words out clearly, Adam. I'm sorry about that. A biblical manual for small group leaders and teachers in the local church. And we were just chatting, as our listeners have come to know, and I hope appreciate, Molly and I love to promote anything and everything that can really benefit the local church in some way. And so when offered, you know, this book and reading into Adam's work, you know, I thought, well, what church does not need to revamp and kind of rethink how we're doing small group ministry in a post-COVID world? So Adam, welcome. Glad you're here.
Thanks, Ben. I am glad to be here.
Wonderful. But, you know, before we get into the meat of your book, I'm just curious, why this book and why now? What led you to this project?
Yeah, great question, Ben. And really excited to be on here with you guys and to come on and share. And, you know, you're exactly right. Who doesn't need to revamp or at least take a new reevaluation or look at their group's ministry based on what we had happen in 2020 and the lingering effects that continue to this and a lot of paradigm shifts that have happened in churches. And so for me, I actually began writing this book before COVID ever happened. It was the first book I began writing and the fifth book that I published. So it was a 6-year process of, you know, writing that book, collecting data. We took over 1,000 new group leaders, small group leaders, if you will, and Sunday school teachers included in that, through this training process over that 6-year period to really assess and go, what do group leaders need? What are they missing? What are they facing? And so I did not start out really to write a book. I was just trying to put together some materials for our own local church that I was a life group's pastor at the time. And got on a call. I'd kind of fallen into consulting with churches just based on the success the Lord had granted our ministry. It had doubled every year for 4 years. And I was consulting a church planter who was asking about groups ministry. He's like, hey man, do you have any of this stuff in writing? Like, I love what you're doing. I love the training, as I was telling about it. And we ended the call. I was like, man, I don't. It's kind of like in my head, in my heart, I could send you some documents, but it's just not going to make sense. Right. And the whole call ended on a damper. I mean, it was like he didn't have his expectations met. I got off. I was like, man, I don't feel like I really helped him. And then that was the moment I got off that call and the Lord just confirmed with me. And I said, all right, Lord, you want me to write this book. If you'd have asked anyone in my childhood or high school years, if Adam was going to write a book, they'd be like, I put money down. He's not going to, you know?
Yeah.
So that's how that came about.
Well, I love sort of your lead on this, how data-driven, you know, this project is, not just, you know, a blueprint for how to do, you know, group leader training and things, but how much you took field learning that you did and informed all of this. Over 1,000 group leaders, what lessons did you learn sort of in that process of collecting data from various group leaders?
Yeah. So as we went through that, a lot of the data that we collected, and just to give context for the audience listening, right? This is a resource, a workbook, online courses, doctrinal assessments, all sorts of, I mean, this thing is just loaded and it hits the head, the heart, and the hands, right? Of good theology. It's got heart level, interpersonal relationship building, and then it's got best practices of how to help facilitate, run small group, or teach a Sunday school class. And as you look at a lot of books out there, a lot of the groups ministry books you're going to see are really about structuring groups. And this was one of those areas I felt that we really need to have another book that meets the group leader, more so or less so the group's pastor or the discipleship pastor, and more so the actual people on the front lines leading these small groups. And so this was a leader training manual that clergy, pastors could use, ministers could use to train lay leaders to facilitate and lead people into community with one another in a small group setting. And so some of the data that we learned, you know, based on that context for the audience, just to understand kind of what we were purposing this training for, there was one thing in particular, man. I'll say one, and then I'll say a second. The second one is always the most interesting to people. But the first one that we realized was, right, there's a leadership drought. There's never enough leaders to go around, as you know, most churches. How many, you know, I'll go and I'll speak at some event or conference and I'll say, how many of you have enough leaders? And no one raises their hand, right?
Right.
And it's like, how many of you need more leaders? And then every hand goes up. How many of you would like to know how to get more leaders? And then, you know, 110% of hands go up. It's like some people throw up two hands. And so that pinch and pain is a very real thing for most clergy and pastors. And so what we discovered was, as we went through this process, people who on the front end would say, I'm never going to be a group leader. And we invited them to go through a process of this training that was a 5-session training over 5 months, slow process, once a month, and gave them time and runway to discern and decide what the Lord may or may not be calling them to, if it was that or something else or nothing at that season, as far as a service would be into a ministry. What we discovered was that people were far more willing to step up and serve and lead a small group if there was a clear process that we could lay out for them that they thought was that demonstrated competency.
Mm-hmm.
If there was not a clear process of, hey, here's what we're going to take you through, here's how we're going to help you launch, here's how we're going to help people get into your group, so when you do launch, you're not just sitting there alone in your home, embarrassed and feeling insecure. Right?
Lower the learning curve anxiety.
Yes. One of the most anxious, just nervous times that someone can have in trying to start a group, really putting themselves out there. Do people like me? Do they not like me? Because that's what the natural thoughts go to. And so people were far more willing to lead a group and start a group if there was a clear process. So that was the first. The second thing that we found as we got into the training is that most did not understand why we do what we did in group. So they would just start scheduling and breaking up the chunks of time in their group meeting the same way that they had experienced it from their previous leader.
Mm.
Without ever asking, hey, why do we do what we do in group? Like, it's really easy to start group without asking why. And so, you know, generally there's three big components. You're going to see it from Acts 2, 42 through 47. The workbook, Group Leader Training, it's completely based off of Acts 2, 42 through 47. So it's a very transferable biblical principles. It's not just this really tight structure that's not going to fit into any church. It's going to be very transferable to almost any church. But the three big things you're going to see in a group meeting are fellowship, study, and prayer.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in the fourth area, sometimes there's worship. Sometimes groups decide that they would like to sing. And there's some great statistics around that that shows that it really deepens community. But by and large, it's fellowship, study, and prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would ask again and again, hey, if you had, say, 90 minutes, hour and a half, how would you break up this time? And why would you give that amount of time to that? And so we get some people, they'd say, I would do, you know, 30 minutes for fellowship, 30 minutes for study, and 30 minutes for prayer. And then we'd be like, okay, well, why? And then they dive in and be like, okay, but did you really spend 30 minutes on prayer? And they're like, you know what? I don't think we've ever spent more than 10 minutes on prayer in our group. So maybe, you know, I've never thought. And then another one would go, hey, we're going to give 5 minutes to fellowship, 80 minutes to study, 5 minutes to prayer, because it's all about the word. We got to get into the word of God. We got to get to business. We need to quit the chit chat and just get down to it. And yeah. what right? And so what that revealed was, is they thought the only time discipleship happened was when the Bible was open, which is just not true. The fellowship is this, it is discipleship being lived out. It's the word, it's the study being practiced on one another. And so for us to just pull back the layers to say, hey, do you even understand why we fellowship? Like, that's not a just a socially acceptable cue for you to kind of usher into the study. Rather, fellowship, I mean, this is what Jesus did with his disciples in John 3:24. It says he went out into the Judean wilderness. They spent time together. In the Greek, that word means they rubbed off on each other. They were learning from one another by just the time they were spending with one another. And that fellowship as a group leader is huge, because as you get to kind of connect with people coming into the group meeting, you're getting a pulse on what their day was like. Man, are they on a mountaintop and you guys need to celebrate with them? Or are they in a valley and you need to reconsider how you're going to speak some of the truth tonight you had in your study that could be a little harsh if they're in a valley already? So those were two of the big things that we had seen was, man, people don't know why they do what they do in group when they do get into the group meeting. And people were far more willing to serve, to be a group leader, if there was a clear process.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, I think that it's so vital that it's something that as church leaders and pastors, we take for granted. And one thing that comes to mind is understanding that this ministry for group leaders and volunteers is like their secondary or tertiary, you know, emphasis. They probably have full-time jobs. They have families. They have this whole life outside of the church, but there's a real grace in knowing the gift that they do want to serve in the church. But then we just kind of assume, well, you got 40 hours in your week to figure this out because we're paid staff and that's what we do. But the more you can kind of say, here's a blueprint. Now the execution process of it all comes into play.
100%. I would have young guys coming out of seminary who'd either do a residency with us or internship, or they were one of my employees when I was executive pastor discipleship on staff at a church. And the just lack of realizing, hey, they have a life and this is not their, this, you know, you're working here full time. This is not their life. This is a part of their life. That's to complement and encourage and, you know, enhance all the things that they're doing through their week, but this is not their life. And so if you have not given a thought out clear process that you can put on a one page document and show them, here are the steps I'm going to take you through, and here's what we're going to do to launch you successfully. If you are not giving them a clear picture that you are competent to lead them into bearing fruit in this ministry, like there's a thousand other things in their life that they can give their time to, from youth sports with their kids, other family members, neighbors, other clubs, other associations and organizations that they could serve on, that they probably could feel like they'd make a bigger impact with for the gospel. And so if we're coming in with a half-baked process to help start a new group leader, it's highly likely they're just going to go, you know, and they won't verbalize it, just internally, they're going to go, yeah, I'm definitely not giving my time to this.
Right.
So, yeah, you better come to the plate swinging big, man, and having it thought through well, and you've prepared and trained them to do exactly what you hope that they would do.
So how is this resource different than, say, your typical small group leader training resources?
So this resource is a little bit different than a lot of your small group ministry books you're going to see out there. And, you know, on the video here, I've got all my small group books back behind me on the shelf. And there's, you know, there's probably like 20 of them back there, and they're phenomenal. I've learned things from each and every single one of them. A lot of them are set up to help a pastor or a clergy member structure groups ministry, whereas this one is more around, how do we train the leader to lead group when someone is in that group meeting week to week? How do they build biblical community? How do they help other people grow and take next steps in their faith journey to become more like Christ? Two of the other parts of this I have found, I didn't realize it was unique until afterwards and it was published. The final two sessions of the five in there are training our group leaders how to mobilize their group members to begin serving, So they, in a sense, are almost serving as like next step assimilation ministers to help mobilize the body from being an audience into an army, into action to see that kingdom expansion. And then the fourth one is, how do you as a group begin to multiply either new groups or multiply the gospel into other people? So they're doing community-based evangelism with one another, which is far easier than, you know, solo, you know, kind of trying to share faith with someone. There's some scary things about that. And yeah, so those two things were very unique in that our leader training was not just talking about how do you help people get in a group, in their seat, study, but it was how do we move them from seat and study to service and sharing of the gospel. And so that turned out to be a very big difference from what I see in most other resources. And that was just feedback that I had received from people who had gone through this workbook and what they had seen and that was different and what they liked about it.
So I like that a lot. Now, and it may not be this book, maybe this is your next book. So in light of that sort of culture and emphasis on the practical elements of non-clergy leaders leading other non-clergy leaders, what is the role? What is a healthier role? If it's not micromanaging groups, what's the healthier role for the clergy in your eyes?
Certainly. I get that question a good bit, working with churches and consulting churches, and there's always mixed reviews about how they feel with small groups, that some clergy are, man, they're nervous about small groups and letting them go off campus and be meeting homes, and there's some unknown, and we don't know what's happening there. And so, like, can we trust that? And then on the other side, it's like, hey, man, we love them and we trust them with everything. And then you're like, well, you guys have a kind of a big mess here that you didn't, you know, preemptively prepare these people for. And so they're kind of going rogue a little bit and it's hurting the larger body instead of edifying the larger body. So, you know, I tell pastors, I'm like, guys, groups are dangerous. Mm-hmm. They are dangerous to darkness, to Satan, to sin. And the power of groups can diminish those things. It can overcome those things. It can penetrate it with light and see people progress and amazing stories of life transformation. But to see that happen, it is not going to just happen accidentally or on its own. There is an immense amount of plumbing that goes into place underneath that no one sees to help support that to grow and to thrive. And so, you know, sort of like a practical example of that is the group leader training resource. If you invest into your leaders on the front end in a high amount, then you can have a high level of trust on the back end after they have deployed and began their group. If you invite those potential new leaders to an interest meeting, and then that interest meeting halfway through turns into their training, and then they launch, it's a cheap, just short process where it does not do justice to the ministry they're going to do. They do not feel equipped. They were like, hey, this was microwaved. And so that's how they're going to treat it because that's how it was presented and modeled for them. And if you will take the time and you will crockpot this and you will give it the due justice and time that is required for an actual leader to reach the fruit on the tree of leadership, give them a ladder to climb, not just tell them to jump high or cut the tree down and eat rotten fruit. Man, you will see those stories of life transformation and progress, the beauty of the gospel invading, changing people. When you invest a lot in the front end, you can have high trust on the back end. And that's the key balance between the two extremes that I kind of laid out there.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Where can people not only find more about this particular book, but more about all of your work?
Yeah. So you can go to our website, www.buildgroups.net. We have plenty of other resources than this. We have more than a dozen free resources. If you make an account, it's free on our website. You can access those, download those free ebooks, spiritual growth assessments, things of that nature. We've also got five other books that some are sort of like a short next steps resource, like why be a church member, why gather for worship, why join a group. So, I mean, all those different things and the consulting and coaching we do to help churches increase their group's ministry by 30 to 50% in 6 to 12 months. That's kind of what we do. That's what we help churches do. And we've done it again and again with churches all around the country. And so if you want to learn more about that, you can go to buildgroups.net. You can shoot me an email personally. I'll give you my personal email. You won't find that on the website, but adam@buildgroups.net. And yeah, you can learn some more there.
Awesome. One thing I always like to ask authors, especially with great books like yours, what is one thing that did not make it into this book that you wish now had made it in?
That is such a good question, man. And like, because there was so much that was put in and then pulled out and then put in and pulled it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, like this, the workbook is not a book that you read, right? It's very much like, you know, it's 160 some pages or 70 pages or something, but there's a lot of white space because it's designed to be a workbook. So everything we put in there is like, man, what is like, what feels like the sledgehammer of truth? That's just, you know, or just like, man, that's like a warm blanket, like all those types of statements that we could get in there.
Right.
Those were the things that we're trying to put in. So to sit here and think, I'm like, oh man, what's one thing I wish that we would have included? You know, I wish on the front end, I could have put in there a little bit more about how we lay out our actual training process, like how we use it. Cause I get that question a lot. And so they get the resource like, okay, but how do you structure this? Cause I didn't want to pre-structure it for churches. But what I found again and again is churches actually wanted me to pre-structure it for them. They're like, well, if someone wanted to get it done in 5 weeks, like, hey, you do that. If you want to do it in 10 weeks, every other week, do it. If you want to do it over 5 months, do it. But that's the question I get the most. So I wish I would have put in there how we structured the training, which we did once a month for 5 months. And the reason we did that, man, there's so many reasons that you slow down and it speeds it up.
Mm-hmm.
But when you spread it out over that time, you're giving them truly an opportunity to discern, is God calling me to this? Like, I'm not using you to fill a hole in my ministry. I'm allowing you to actually seek out, is God truly calling me to serve in this role? And if so, man, let's take that journey and walk together and explore that over 5 weeks, over 5 months, not in 5 weeks, not in, you know, one session on a Sunday morning interest meeting turned into a training. But actually explore. And then by month two, a lot of them are going, I am called to this. And so 3 months ahead, before you're going to launch new groups, you already know who your new groups are going to be.
Mm.
You can start connecting new people to those groups months in advance before it ever launches. They can start collecting and, you know, kind of forming their core group team. They could meet 2 to 3 times before they ever officially launch and know, I'm going to have people show up to my group. Okay, the anxiety has been removed out of this. The excitement has been amped up. So that's one thing I wish I would have put in there, is how we structured it and why we structured it that way. And I think that would be very valuable.
Very nice. Very nice. Again, Adam, thank you so much for your time today for this book. I mean, this is going to be a real gift to the church. You know, again, in a world where most of us really do need to look critically, not only at revamping our small group ministry, but how to just make it more faithful, and using this interruption that COVID was for us as maybe an opportunity to lay that groundwork. But for listeners, at all of Adam's work, we're going to have a bunch of links in the show notes. Obviously, a link to buy the book, a link to his website, those free resources that he mentioned. All those things that we're going to try to put in the show notes there, ways to contact Adam and to follow up on this. But Adam, thank you so much for your time and for this wonderful gift to the church.
Absolutely. Thank you for the time, Ben. Really appreciate it. Glad I could come on and share. And yeah, I hope it's a blessing. We want to see lives change. That's what it's all about. That's what gets me up in the morning. I bleed stories of life change, man. So thank you again for giving me the opportunity to come on.
Awesome. Thank you. And again, if you're a listener, if you'd like to give us a 5-star review, we would love that. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a positive review there. Follow us. We have accounts on Instagram and Facebook. You can also contact Molly and I directly. If you have an idea, even for an upcoming show that you like, the theme or something, your book or anything you'd like to see us kind of follow up on, this is your show as well. So we would love for you to do that. And until then, We'll see you next time on the Faith Revisited podcast.